bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 451. To be broadcast on Wednesday, August 13th, 2025 on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with maybe my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. She's in the other room. She said she'll be in soon. This Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to leave contribute information to the show and are listening on Facebook Live, you can comment right here below at this broadcast, or you can simply send me an email at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org. iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's Rant of the Week. Another Bump in the Road, episode 5. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I guess I've been back on the air now since I had my neck thing done. Note that I am braceless. I no longer have a brace around my neck, which is kind of nice. And it's improving. I'm getting better at this, but the pain is still there at the end of the day. It's still kind of odd the way that works, but you know, you don't realize how much support the muscles, especially your traps in the back here, do to support your head, and your head's heavy. So therefore it is going to hurt for a long time. But anyway, we'll move on that one. Here's another rant for you. You're scrolling the comments under an article about a new bike lane, and there it is. No one uses them. Or maybe you're riding peacefully down a calm urban street when a passing driver yells, "Get off the road!" Anti-bike arguments aren't just frustrating. They're outdated, inaccurate, and often repeated without a shred of evidence. We'll talk about that a little more in the show. I thought that was kind of a cool article, and we will go there and check it out. Sharrows, you know, Sharrows, my friend Tony called those the toilet paper of bicycle safety. Yeah, not so great, but Sharrows are those funny little pictures of bicycles in the road with the arrows that are going forward kind of in a herringbone type of thing. Yeah, well, anyway, Sharrows used to make sense in theory, but now are mostly useless and possibly dangerous. We'll talk about a little bit more of that in the show, too. All right, done ranting. Positive side, here we go. Listener and longtime bicycle advocate and old friend Joel LaChance says, also on a positive side, New Haven's bicycle education program in the public schools will double in size for the next school year. Yay, New Haven. Yay. That's great. That's wonderful. Now, New Haven is a much, much bigger town it's more like a city than it is up here in Mansfield. But we have that up here in Mansfield, too. And it's a great program. It's a fourth grade program. It gets every child that goes through the education system here in Mansfield is left with a week of education about bicycles, bicycle safety, how to work on your bike, how to ride your bike in traffic, and all sorts of fun stuff. So it's really, really cool. And of course, you know, check it out. The collar's off. That's always a positive, right? No more collar. I'm not doing the collar anymore. Today, though, I do have a doctor's appointment, and I will be talking to my surgeon, and it is going to be as of the broadcast of this show, it will be 7 weeks now since I had the initial surgery on my neck. So anyway, moving forward, and other very positive thing to go along with that, I went up to the community center this morning, and I did not ride on a recumbent bike. I rode on an upright bike. I rode on a spin bike this morning, and it was fine. It felt really good. It felt good it felt good to breathe hard. It felt good to work hard again on a bike. I haven't done that in so long. I'm way out of shape. Woo! We want to talk about that. It'll get better. I know. It always comes back, but boy, as you get older, it comes back a little slower. how come your fitness goes away faster, but then comes back slower when you get old? Shouldn't it be the other way? Well, anyway, we won't get into that. Anyway, before you know it, we're going to be watching the Vuelta. Yeah, guess what? The Vuelta's coming up. Vuelta España is August 23rd through September 14th. Four flat stages with one high-altitude finale, six medium mountain stages, five mountain stages, one individual time trial, three hilly stages with high-altitude finales, and two rest days. Coming soon, folks. Yes, siree. Here we go. The Tour of Spain, right around the corner. Mechanical Minute and Ron's tip for the week. What should bicycle commuters do about wildfire smoke? Why do I bring up wildfire smoke? I'll tell you why. Because we have Canadian wildfire smoke down here right now. There's huge fires going on in Canada, and the smoke, for some reason, drops right down here on us. And so there are days, and there were a couple of days a week ago that I don't know if I would have wanted to be out there riding in that, because it was thick. You could actually smell the smoke in the air. Not to mention, visually, you could see it from a distance. It was like a fog had rolled in. It was very, very strange. Or for you on the West Coast, what do they call those? They call fog something bizarre on the West Coast. A marine layer. Yeah, marine layer. I learned that one when I was working for some California companies, and they said, oh, there's going to be a heavy marine layer. And I said, what is a marine layer? And, oh, that right out there. I said, that's fog. And, well, anyway, different places in the country, and I know there's a definition for it, and I understand that. But anyway, shout out to my friends out there on the West Coast. So what do you do about wildfires and wildfire smoke? As forest fires continue to ravage large areas, that means the return of high levels of air pollution due to smoke that is anticipated in the coming days in many cities in Canada and across the United States. So Momentum, which is a website, Momentum Mag, had a whole bunch of good stuff today. So I've got a lot of stuff that's going to be coming from their content. And one of them was what to do about these Canadian wildfires and the smoke that you're dealing with. So if we can find it. Yeah, wildfire smoke. So the forest fires are, you know, continuing to happen. They happen all over our country. This is apparently, according to all of the research out there, this has a lot to do with the warming of our planet and other various things that make things drier and hotter. And so therefore, fires are more likely to happen now. Just like hurricanes are more likely to be intense, as more intense than they used to be, because of the change of our climate, because we're not doing good things. Why do I mention that? Because if you just ride your bike, you could contribute to the other side, balance it out. Yeah, and bicycles are what we talk about here on the show. So anyway, there's got to be a number of people that are riding their bikes, like in Canada, or where Momentum is out of, or New York City or Boston. And these smoke plumes, they come from forest fires in northeastern Ontario and Quebec, and they're forecasted to once again envelop the area. Once again, I don't know what it's like right now, but they seem to have cleared up a little bit since last week, but they were really intense last week. But for many of the bicycle commuters, you know, your choice is to ride on the daily, linking yourself to trying to help out with the climate crisis, also your own personal fitness and all that. But what is it? So what do you do about this? It's also a main source of transportation to employment, or directly linked to employment, such as delivery drivers. So what do you do? It's essential to note that air quality and visibility can fluctuate significantly over short distances and vary considerably from hour to hour due to the presence of wildfire smoke. Wildfire smoke poses a threat to everyone's health, even at low concentrations. Therefore, it is crucial for individuals to take proactive measures to minimize exposure. According to the experts, at Environmental Canada, individuals with pre-existing lung diseases such as asthma or heart diseases, older adults, geez, that would be me, older adults, that would be me too, and children, pregnant individuals, and outdoor workers are particularly vulnerable to the health effects caused by the wildfire smoke. It's strongly advised that they consult their healthcare providers to develop a management plan for wildfire smoke events. I should send my my PCP a note and say, what do I do about this? Anyway, it is crucial to maintain a supply of necessary medications at home to carry them with you at all times during wildfire season. If breathing becomes uncomfortable, or if you or someone in your care feels unwell, it's important to stop or reduce physical activity levels, in some cases reaching out to your healthcare provider or local health authority in the event of severe symptoms. It's highly recommended. Watch and act accordingly. So you kind of have to regularly monitor your air quality index. And there's some great weather apps out there which have that there, and you can look and you can see what the air quality of the day is about. When we get these really hot and humid days like we're having right now, sometimes the air quality gets a little on the low side there too. So it's a good idea to take a look at that and see what the effect is going to be. And if you're residing in a home equipped with HVAC system, utilizing the highest rating MERV filter, ideally rated 13 or higher, although I've been told not to go over 10, but that's another story. I would have to do some research on that, because it also puts a lot of strain on the HVAC system. So just a word to me, word to the wise. And you know, you can always change your filter more often. They're not expensive. So but you want to keep your doors and windows closed when there's wildfires out there. You want to try to let your filtration system within your building take care of the problem if you can. You can also use high efficient particulate air filters or HEPA filter air cleaners, and they can be very beneficial. Finding locations within a community that clean and cool the air provide respite from the smoke during breaks. Libraries, shopping malls, community centers are also some options if you need to. If cycling to and from work over long distances or working on a bicycle outside, consider locking up and taking a break at these locations. Yeah, so, you know, the only thing you can really do is go into cleaner air if you're out there. And remember those masks? Remember those masks? Yeah. The people that are riding with masks. Remember, we were all wearing masks because we were dealing with the whole COVID thing a number of years ago. You know, if your downtown smells like a campfire, you can't really detect the pine in it. Another said, cool, this scent is our impending demise. So if outdoor activities are unavoidable, wear a properly fitted respirator mask, such as a NIOSH certified or N95 or equivalent, that can reduce your exposure to fine particles present in the smoke. However, it is important to note that respirators do not provide protection against the gases present in the wildfire smoke. Paying attention to your body and reducing or stopping activities as symptoms arise is crucial. Masks can be worn under helmets very easily. Taking care of individuals or care and others who may be more susceptible to the effects of smoke is of the utmost importance. So your lung health. The Lung Health Foundation has expressed concern for the lung health of millions of Canadians in the face of ongoing wildfires. They advise individuals with lung diseases to take additional precautions to protect the respiratory health. This is crazy. So we can't ride our bikes outside because of the smoke? Eesh. It's not really good. So all you can do is you can go through these steps. Pay attention to your air quality index. See what it is rated for that day. Minimize outdoor activities and strenuous physical exertion when air quality is affected by smoke. Whenever possible, protect indoor air from wildfire smoke by keeping windows and doors closed. and employ those air filters and HEPA filters. In case it becomes challenging to find clean and cool air, reach out to your local jurisdiction for information on designated cooling and clean air spaces. Once again, we mentioned malls and libraries, that sort of thing. And if you must spend time outdoors, wear a well-fitted respiratory type mask, such as a NIOSH certified or N25. So back to, you want to try to protect what's going in. You got to help yourself. Mental health is also important during wildfire smoke. If you're experiencing stress, anxiety, depression symptoms, seek help from a healthcare professional. So that's what you do with the wildfire smoke. You basically kind of have to play it by ear and see what works best for you. So you got to be careful, got to be super careful, because that wildfire smoke will come back and haunt you later on. Sad that we have come to this point. But anyway, that's where we're at, and that's what it's all about. So let's see, what else do we have here on the list today? That's my Ron's tip of the week. Should commuters, what should you do about wildfire smoke? Pay attention to it, I think, is probably the best answer for that question. Okay, from this week's rant. Well, one of the rants I had is this: you're scrolling under comments under an article about a new bike lane, and then somebody complains about who uses those things anyway? Why are we wasting all our money on those? Blah, 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 blah. Well, we're going to talk about that a little bit and see what the story might be on that. So that's not the click I wanted right there. We're going to go here. It's a comeback thing. Okay, so what do you say to these folks? Because you're going to hear it. You're going to hear it. You're going to be at a family gathering. You're going to be at a friend's picnic or whatever this time of year, a party maybe, and somebody will complain about the bike lanes because, oh, they just put this big bike lane in. They took my parallel parking out. I can't stand it. Now I have to go park my car in the parking garage. It's terrible. Well, suck it up. You are the one who bought the car. Anyway, whatever. So how do you deal with this? Well, let's see. So no one uses the bike lanes. Okay. The answer is, actually, they do, just efficiently. So you take something like Penn Ave in Pittsburgh. It sees over 400 daily trips, sometimes spiking past 3,700 in a single day. Since installation, that one lane has logged more than 1 million trips. You might not see it jammed with riders at rush hour like the car lane, because surprise, bike lanes work and they move people quickly and cleanly. And you just aren't sitting behind them idling. In Toronto, bikes actually topped the number of cars on the very central Bloor Street this summer. Yes, more bikes than cars. I talked about that in the show a couple of weeks ago. And that happens quite often in cities like Europe, like Copenhagen. And in Minneapolis, ridership consistently spikes when safe infrastructure is introduced. Build it and they do come. Bike lanes take up too much space and make streets dangerous. That's the next complaint here. So as far as the efficiency part of it too, the reason you don't see so many people in the bike lanes is because they've already moved through. They don't get jammed up like they do in car lanes. And that's a thing that brings this misconception out there. You may not see somebody in the bike lane, but there's a really good chance that 100 bikes went through before you ever got there. So, and you might be at just that part of the bike lane or that part of your commute that you didn't see them. That's all. But they're there. They're using them and they use them fairly heavily. So bike lanes take up too much space and make streets dangerous. Not true. They actually make the streets safer. Again, we go back to this. Data doesn't lie. On streets with protected bike lanes, crash rates typically drop for drivers, cyclists, and pedestrians. Right? There you go. When everyone knows where they belong, roads function better. Yes, drivers need to slow down a bit, but that's not inconvenient. It's safety. And if you're passing wobbly cyclists in traffic, bike lanes are your solution. They remove confusion, create predictability, and lower tension for everyone. So there is your answer right there. My favorite. Cyclists don't pay for the roads. I love this. I love this argument. This is one of my favorites. Most local roads in North America, the ones we ride on, are funded through general taxes like property, income, and sales tax. These aren't user fees. That means that whether you drive or not, you help pay for the roads. Plus, most cyclists also drive and pay vehicle registration and gas taxes. So many cyclists are subsidizing your driving lifestyle while creating less wear and tear, needing less space, and reducing emissions. I've had this conversation so often with people. You don't pay for the roads. People that are, I know that people that I've had this conversation with, and I've explained to them that it's not the gas tax that's paying for the roads. It's not their vehicle that's paying for the roads. It's actually their income tax that's paying for the roads. They don't know this. A lot of people are not aware of it. So, a majority of this, of the highway funding that comes here in the United States, is paid for through income tax. So, enough said. Yeah. And I have had a number of people, after having this conversation with me, they look at me and go, I had no idea. And I said, I know. That's why I'm hoping that we can clarify this. And I'm going to thank you for paying your income tax, because it makes us have nicer roads, which is really good. And by the way, I own a car. So therefore, I also pay. And oh, by the way, did I mention I own a house? And so therefore, I am also paying for it. So I am enabling, even if I were to park my car and decide I'm no longer going to drive the car, I'm just going to ride my bike, I'm still paying for the cars that are on the road. Think about that. So if you can explain it in that way, and then also thank them. To come back with a positive response. Thank them very much for asking about it. And then also thank them for paying their taxes, because it makes all of our roads better. Simple, huh? It's hard to create an argument off of a thank you. They should be licensed and insured like drivers. There's another good argument for you. Licensing scheme for cyclists has been tried and abandoned. They're expensive, hard to enforce. They don't actually increase safety. Unlike the 300-pound plus vehicles, bikes aren't deadly weapons. That's why we regulate drivers and not tools. And for those who do ride and drive, auto insurance often extends to bike-related incidents already. Cyclists already facing ticketing and even points on their license in many jurisdictions. That system works and doesn't need a bloated new bureaucracy. So why do you want to license me? Why do you want... Well, here's what I would prefer. And it's going to go on to the next complaint too. I really think, and especially because, you know, we now have this, and the city of New Haven also has this great program where they're educating kids at the grade school level about bicycle safety and all. I would prefer if you're a parent of a child or a grandparent of a child and you're listening to the show right now, and you know that they ride on the road, you need to have a conversation with them about the rules for the road. Because if I see one more kid riding their bike down the street on the wrong side of the road, and it just drives me crazy. It drives me nuts when I see that. So have an intelligent conversation with your child or your grandchild or your niece or your nephew or whatever that's out riding on the road. Have an intelligent conversation with them about road safety and rules of the road. We have to take a driver's test and to get a driver's license to be able to drive a car on the road, yet we don't have to do that to ride a bike. Maybe that's something that we could all work on. That's another thing. Bringing us to the next complaint. And the next complaint is cyclists never follow the rules. That is a bad answer, because the answer to that, that's a bad complaint, because the answer to that is, do drivers? Yeah, research shows that people break traffic laws across the board, drivers, cyclists, and even pedestrians. A 2020 Colorado study found that 7.9% of both cyclists and drivers commit infractions. The difference? Motivation. Cyclists often roll red lights for safety to stay visible or ahead of overtaking traffic. Drivers usually do it to save time. And I will say that there are moments when I have had to make a move on my bicycle that might be considered an infraction, but it wasn't there because I was trying to do it to not be safe. It was actually to be safe, to get out of the way of an oncoming vehicle that was coming up way, way too fast. So, and the consequence, a mixed signal on a bike might annoy someone. The same in an SUV could be fatal. Context and mass matters. Hello, Franny. See, I told you she'd be here at some point. So, Yeah. You know, we are all guilty of breaking rules. It's true.
Shame on you.
But when you break a rule with a car or a motorized vehicle and you got 6,000 pounds underneath you, it could be deadly. Just saying. I noticed that out at our favorite intersection here, which is about a mile and a half from our house, where Route 203 and Route 6 combine with a little road, which is called, I think it's called actually, it's North Windham Road Extension is what it is. It goes right through the little village of North Windham. I see another white cross with lots of flowers. So somebody else got killed at that intersection. Now, that intersection, just so you know, started out where Route 6 was just a two-lane road. And so it's a major thoroughfare. It has been known in the past as Suicide 6 because of the number of people who have died on it in motorized vehicles. And, well, someone else just lost their life at that intersection. And the problem with it is they took a road that was just two lanes, okay, did have a traffic light at the end of the, at to regulate the traffic as it came through, and they made it into four lanes. And when they made it into four lanes, the number of deadly accidents went up, not down. So there it is. That's called deadly by design. And that is a DOT problem, and it's something that could have been prevented if they had simply put a roundabout or a traffic circle in instead of a traffic light. Roundabouts and traffic circles require the drivers of all vehicles, be it bicycle, be it motorized vehicle, to slow down to at least 20 miles per hour. 20 miles per hour does not kill you. 70 miles an hour will. So anyway, that's what happens. And people, what happens on that intersection is people run the red light as someone else is coming through because they're in a hurry or whatever, and they're driving something beastly down the road, and they hit someone, and they will kill them on the spot if they hit them on the side of their car. So it's tricky. It's real, real tricky. So, yeah, but if you are going to break the rules on your bicycle, you better be real, real careful. But if you break the rules in a car, you should be even more careful because it's deadly. Anyway, why don't they just ride on the sidewalk or stick to trails? Okay, well, mostly because it's not safe. And oftentimes, it's not legal. In most cities, riding on sidewalks is illegal in business districts. It's dangerous for pedestrians and cyclists alike, and while trails are great, they don't go everywhere. They don't connect to schools and shops or work. You wouldn't accept only being allowed to drive on highways, so why would you want cyclists to stick to a trail that doesn't do anything or go anywhere? Good point. Bike lanes, here comes the next one. Bike lanes hurt small businesses by removing parking. This is one of my favorites. Okay, well, I have a lot of favorites, but this one definitely falls into it. This one is especially persistent and wrong. Research from Toronto, New York, and Portland has shown that bike lanes often improve business. Cyclists shop more frequently than drivers, and a single car parking space can be replaced with racks for 10 bicycles. More foot traffic for local spending. And think about it. People biking can stop on a dime, park near a door, carry groceries on panniers or cargo bikes. There's no real threat to the business. It's a lifeline. It's a beautiful thing. And hey, if I could have put 10 bicycles in front of my store years ago, and instead of trying to fit 10 cars in a parking lot that only held 6, you can see the bonus here. You can definitely see the bonus. So helmets should be mandatory. Well, this is a big debate, and this debate will go on and on and on, because in Europe, they don't wear helmets very often. And there's a lot of people who ride on the rail trails around here I see without helmets on. Helmets help reduce injury, sure, but mandatory helmet laws can backfire. They discourage casual riding, lower bike share use, and often enforced unfairly, especially in marginalized communities. This has been a statistic that has come to life because there are towns that enforce the helmet law. And what it does is it has a racial profile problem, and it has a financial profile problem. So that's a big deal. So do we need to have mandatory helmet laws? We in Connecticut have a mandatory helmet law for kids 16 and under. So if you're a parent and you're not putting a helmet on your child, you're probably making a pretty big mistake there. Of course, you've got a helmet on them if they're playing hockey. You've got a helmet on them if you're going skiing. You've got a helmet on them if they're standing in the batter's box getting ready to have a fastball pitched at them. Why not on the bike? It makes sense. It just makes a lot of sense. So if you really care about it, you're better to complain about there aren't enough bike lanes. Biking is only for rich guys in Lycra. Well, you know, guess what? I'm not a rich guy. I am in Lycra. And yeah, there is a profile there. There's certainly a profile. There's the same profile in cycling as there is in golf. They're expensive sports. And there's a huge difference between the two of them, but they generally require payment almost every time you get on your bike or go to the golf course, correct? Right. So, you know, a runner has a freedom of just being able to go out and run whenever they want. A walker has the freedom going out and walking whenever they want. They can get their physical exercise that way. They can use their bodies for transportation. The bike, you got to invest in the bicycle. You also got to invest in taking care of the bicycle. It's still way, way, way less than taking care of a motorized vehicle. And that stereotype is never totally true. So from community bike co-ops like Pittsburgh's Free Ride to grassroots cycling groups in BIPOC. I don't know what BIPOC is. Communities across North America. Biking is a tool of empowerment and mobility. It is affordable, accessible, and increasingly inclusive. The real issue isn't who's riding. It's who feels safe enough to start riding. Building a better bicycle infrastructure means more people riding, not just those confident enough to mix it up with the cars or suit up in spandex. And yes, if I am out riding in a high traffic area and I happen to be on my road bike because I'm out for a ride, I am going to be well seen. And that's a good thing. You know, maybe because I'm wearing a bright colored jersey, or hey, look, there's a guy on a bike, because you can see he's got all the stuff on, you know, that makes him look like a cyclist. It doesn't mean I have a ton of money. It just means that I like to be comfortable when I ride my bike, and the clothing that I wear is very effective and very practical. And once you learn about that, you want more of it. So you're going to be that guy in Lycra. You're going to be wearing those nice shorts that feel so much better than trying to ride in like a pair of running shorts or I can't even think about it. There's a reason for all that. So it's not only for rich guys in Lycra. And the other thing is, there are a lot of people out there that are unable to afford a very, very expensive bike. And bikes can be very affordable. When I had my bicycle shop back in the day, I would prepare all of our used bicycles for sale as of the 1st of August. And why did I do that? Because it was the time when the international students and the students were starting to migrate back to the two local colleges, and those bikes would be out for no more than 2 weeks maximum, and they were gone. And I went through lots and lots and lots of them because they were relatively inexpensive. They were used, they were tuned up, they were ready to go, they were very functional, and people would come, and the word got out. People would come every year, and they would scarf up my used bicycles because it was inexpensive transportation. And when you come from other parts of the world, you realize that transportation isn't always cars and trucks. Anyway, building better infrastructure is what we really need to do for that too. But the city is too hilly, cold, rainy, insert excuse here. Okay, e-bikes and modern gear have changed everything. Hills, handling, rain, wear a jacket. Snow, cities like Montreal and Minneapolis are embracing year-round bicycling. You take a look at Minneapolis, and they were the number one bike city in the United States a couple of years ago. Not Portland, Oregon, where it rains all the time in the wintertime. Also, rain wasn't an excuse. So, you know, cold and rain, it's really not an excuse when you dress properly for it and you're prepared for it and you got to ride everywhere, then it's not such a big deal. It says here, we can't all be expected to bike. Fair. But that's not the point, okay? Not everyone can or wants to bike, but some people can and do, and they deserve a safe and efficient, affordable way to move through the city. Just like transit riders, just like drivers, this isn't about forcing anyone out of their car. It's about freedom of choice. Want cleaner air, less traffic, more vibrant streets, safer communities? Support better bike infrastructure. That's how we get there. And then the final thought, bikes aren't the problem. They're part of the solution. If you're angry at traffic, pollution, cost of parking, cost of living, parking shortages, or road safety, bicycles aren't your enemy. They're your ally. Making space for them isn't about punishment, it's about progress. So the next time someone launches into you with a tired anti-bike rant, just smile. You got facts and stats. Just be nice. Be nice. And you know what? When they start yelling at you, just do exactly what I've done all the time. Thank them very much for talking about it with you. And then bring out the positive. Just bring out the positive. Don't scream back at them. That is the anti. That's a really good way of getting yourself in a lot of trouble. Show them what the positive effects are. And at the end, I can almost guarantee you they'll be thanking you for the conversation. So anyway, that's it. I went there. And your comeback to all anti-cycling arguments. That's it. There's a whole bunch of good ones there. All right, the next thing I have on here is to shero or not to shero. Yeah, so we talked about this in the rant too. So sheros, as I explained earlier, are the, my friend Tony, who had a bicycle shop in Hartford for a number of years, BC Co., he is unfortunately no longer there because he is a wonderful advocate for cycling, but he used to call sheros the toilet paper of bicycle safety because that's about what they're good for. They're not very effective. Painted sheros are basically useless. Okay. Yeah. They give you a visual, and who is the visual for? Is it for the person on the bicycle or is it for the person driving the motorized vehicle? That is the big question here. They really are indicating where cyclists should ride, but in reality, they're about as effective as trying to protect yourself from a charging rhino with a wet paper towel. Studies have shown that sharrows don't actually provide any real safety benefits for cyclists. In fact, they may even make things worse, encouraging drivers to pass cyclists too closely. It's like trying to protect yourself from a swarm of angry bees with a sign that says, "Please don't sting me." It's just not going to work. People for Bikes senior editor or senior director Dave Snyder was one of those in the old-timey ways who believed that sharrows might be the answer. Put symbols on the road so car drivers understand that they are sharing the road and to watch out for cyclists. But we all know that there's no watching out. Snyder recently published an honest editorial about his experience back in the late 1990s. As a former executive director of the California Bicycle Coalition, a key player in the proliferation of shared lane markings. Looking to those examples from Chicago, Paris, Denver, we pushed to get an improved version of the sharrow design formerly used in City Bike's plan and approved for use in the state of California. Snyder wrote, "Mayor Willie Brown famously painted the first sharrow on Grove Street outside of City Hall, getting some green paint and on his fancy suit and laughing it off as he did it." So sharrows, okay, here the idea is simple enough. Okay, you start with a share arrow. It indicates that there's a zone in the road where cyclists would not get doored by people getting in and out of their cars. It's not a bike lane. It was never a bike lane. It was only a guide used ideally on quiet neighborhood streets with low speed limits. So to indicate it as some form of cycling route, to indicate to car drivers to give cyclists more room. The problem was, and it continues to be, that some jurisdictions use them instead of bike lanes because they are so easy to install. It's just paint. Not to mention car drivers just don't seem to pay attention at all anyway. I thought the sharrow would educate bicyclists to stay out of the door zone. So the 3 or so feet of adjacent space to park cars where motorists are opening car doors and bicyclists could collide and usher a new era of safer streets. So one where motorists would patiently wait behind bicyclists taking the lane because the painted symbol made it clear they had that right. Where we couldn't get the bike lane, he had hoped that it would effectively convert to mixed city traffic lane into an ad hoc bike lane. It's wrong, and it just doesn't work. We know that even actual bike lanes painted in some eye-catching hue do not provide enough safety for cyclists. Time and again, research demonstrates that sharrows are ineffective at improving cyclist safety, and in fact, a study published in the Journal of Transport and Health found that sharrows provide no significant safety benefits for bikes. And this is because they do not provide a physical separation between the cyclists and the vehicles, leaving cyclists vulnerable to accidents and injuries. Furthermore, sharrows can actually make things worse. The same study found that sharrows can lead to false sense of security in both the cyclists and the drivers. Cyclists may ride closer to parked cars, increasing the risk of collisions for the opening doors. Meanwhile, drivers may pass the cyclists more closely, putting cyclists in even more danger. There is one solution and one solid solution here. Bike lane, protected bike lane, protected bike lane. So it's been more than 20 years since I had high hopes for the sharrow as a tool, he wrote. Today, we know much more about what it takes to make our streets safer for cycling. We need separate bike paths. We need to protect the bike lanes on busy roads. And where the lanes that are shared, we need actual speed reduced to 20 miles per hour or slower. Yay, my kind of guy. And sharrows don't do any of that. They really don't. They give you a false sense of security. And so that's really what the problem is with the sharrow. The other thing that I've had discussions with people about, because I'm the bike guy, everybody comes to me. You know, if they drive a car, they come to me and they go, "You know, I was out riding my car the other day and one of your guys," one of my guys? My guys? How do you know it's my guy? Just because I ride a bike doesn't mean I represent everyone who rides a bike. Yes, I do on this show, and I like to get that information out there and talk about it, but they're not my people. They're just people who ride bikes. Some of us ride responsibly. Some of us don't. Don't ever call me one of your people if you don't know that it's someone that I know, I don't know or know. So anyway, yeah, that's it. So anyway, the Sharro, I had this conversation with someone and they said, you know, you're supposed to share the road. The sign says you're supposed to share the road and the Sharros are in the road. And I go, yes, that is true. The drivers of some motorized vehicles, not all, but some drivers of motorized vehicles believe that that Sharro and that sign is put there to tell the cyclists to get over and get out of the way. Believe it or not. Yeah. So anyway, as I said, the toilet paper of bicycle safety. That Sharro's, I'm not going to get any more into it. There are new signs that are out that are definitely more appropriate than using Sharro's and putting Sharro's in the road, but they just really are not effective. And it looks like the research shows that they're completely ineffective. So for what it's worth, and I know that my town puts them out on the roads, they put the signs up on the roads, and they need to be updated. They definitely need to be updated. Anyway, it's a hard discussion to have when you don't have the proper infrastructure. But then again, we can't all afford to have the proper infrastructure because it's expensive to create those lanes. So therefore, there it is. All right, that's enough about Sharro's. I've beaten that dead horse enough. I'm going to move forward here. What else do we have? I'm going to start running out of time here the way we're going today. To share or not to share. The free rider myth. Okay, who really pays for the roads? Yeah, this is the one which we talked about briefly earlier. And bicycles don't pay for roads. You see it again and again. It appears on editorial pages, blog comments, and shouted from car windows, often accompanied with the accusation freeloader or some other something much, much ruder. Bicycle freeloader myth is a strong and pervasive economic belief. It is implied the rule that requires cyclists to stay off certain roads or ride in a manner that does not affect car traffic. It is enforced through media headlines, police standards, and behavior and discourse of cycling advocates and detractors alike. But is it true? When you take a trip on a bicycle, you do not pay for gas, and thus you pay no gas tax. Okay, you do not stop and pay tolls, and generally you're not allowed on those toll roads anyway. So you also do not pay for a license or a registration fee, part of which goes towards paving, maintaining, and policing the roads you ride on. Most car insurance companies do not cover bicyclists, so often you do not pay for that either. And you do not pay for parking. No doubt this is all just terribly unfair. Sigh. By the way, if you want insurance for your bicycle, you can get insurance for your bicycle. You can pay for that. And if you have a homeowner's policy, quite often you will have insurance coverage for your bicycle on that homeowner's policy. Don't take my word for it. Check with your insurance agent on that to be sure. Of course, there are many people out there who solely get around car free. Good for them. That's great. Chances are good that any given person out riding the bicycle on the road also owns a car or rents one from time to time. When they do so, they pay all the same fees, fines, and taxes as an everyday motorist does, just as grudgingly. But here's the thing. Cars don't pay for roads either, right? The idea that roads are funded by user fees paid by people who drive is one of the many great myths and in our entire way of life. While the veneer on that myth has been crumbling for some time, we have only recently been forced to begin to look hard at it. And the difference between riding a bicycle and driving a car is surprisingly vast, but not in the way most of us imagine. If I told you you were driving a car and you were a freeloader or a drain on the economy, people on a bicycle are subsidizing a road system that they are largely not welcome on in order to break even the cost of roads and pay for every driver who uses them every year, we would need 54% of commuters using bicycle as their sole means of transportation. That would be a good thing, because that would mean over half of the people would be out there riding their bicycles, just horribly abusing the system. Except those people are still driving to work. Except those people are still paying taxes. And if you live in the U.S., you know, you're gonna be paying income tax, you're going to be paying property tax, and those are, the cars pay about for half of the cost of the roads, all told, half. So where does the rest of the funding come from? We all pay it, whether we drive or whether we don't. Most of us pay for the roads. Not paid directly, but through our taxes. Every time we pay sales tax on a purchase, property tax on our homes, directly or indirectly through rent, or income tax on what we earn, a portion of that goes directly into our transportation system. Okay, so a portion of those taxes paid into a general fund, which is where most transportation money comes from. But the reality, the real cost of building roads ends up being much higher over the years than what the budget can afford. A growing amount of road costs are paid for with borrowed money. We must eventually pay off these loans through our taxes and with interest, so that can amount to 2, 3, or more times the original cost of the project. Worse, this is a funding gap, and it increases every year. With the economy dragging, we drive less, and as fuel and material costs rise, construction grows more expensive. Roads are enormously expensive to build and maintain. If you look at a highway system, the user fees paid by drivers come much closer to paying for them than half through the system that still operates at a loss. But if you look at the local roads on which most of our daily travel happens, the gap is even wider. The cost to maintain local roads is on average more than 6 cents per mile for each car each year. How much do drivers actually pay? Less than a penny. What does this mean for bicycling? While people do not pay to ride bicycles on the road, bicycling also costs almost nothing. Less than 1% of the money spent on transportation infrastructure goes to anything bike-related, and bicycles do not contribute significantly to other road-related expenses like potholes, crashes, or congestion. People who ride bicycles also pay taxes, which means they often pay more into the road system than they cost it. By one estimate, a car-free cyclist would overpay an average of $250 a year, a few dollars more than the amount of the average driver underpays. While cyclists represent all income levels or less equally, the half who ride for transportation alone and do not use your own cars or use cars on the lower end of this income spectrum. For them, this is the very definition of a regressive tax, like a lottery, a program which poor subsidize the better off. There it is. So by that measure, to pay for the cost of keeping one driver on the road, you need someone else who is not driving. It's sort of like insurance. That is paying taxes but putting minimal wear and tear in the system. But 2/3 of people in the U.S. drive, and most of the rest travel in cars and buses as passengers. It is a recipe for debt, and yet there is a consistent demand for more roads to be built so that more of us can drive farther and more often. Despite the growing number of bicycles on the road, there are not nearly enough to balance out this equation. But even if the motorists were to double the fees they pay, those fees were indexed to inflation, it would still be not be enough. Our road system is in bad shape, and we have to be able to spend nearly enough on it in the last decade to keep it even with a minimally good working order. So that's just kind of the beginning of the story, and this story could go on forever. I'm gonna back off on it right now because I'm starting to run out of time, getting towards the end of my show. But that argument that people have had for years about, you know, bikes are just freeloading the system and they don't contribute to what they're doing, it's backwards, okay? And it's unfortunate, but the good news is that ignorance is curable, and stupidity is unfortunate. So there it is. I've said it. As we learn and educate more people about why the bike is a better idea, then things will get better. But it's an uphill battle. And if you ride a bike, you know what it's like to ride up a hill. It's gonna work. It's gonna make it a lot of work. So therefore, there it is. And I support, and you'll hear this at the end of all my shows, about getting out and speaking up and going to your town meetings and demanding better bicycle infrastructure, always, because it is the solution, not the problem. Anyway, let's move on here. What else did I have here? Oh, I was going to go in, talk a little bit about the Vuelta today, but I'm going to wait. I'll wait for next week, and we can talk about that a little bit more. And so in that falls right into my events category. And before you know it, we're going to be watching the Vuelta. It's August 23rd through September 14th. I know it's not even August yet. And we have Project Mayhem Cyclocross coming up very soon here in Connecticut. And we will also, coming very soon, we have the Rocky Hill Cyclocross Training Series, the Wednesday night series coming up over in the dog park in Rocky Hill. Yeah, it's a dog park too. But anyway, Sunday, September 21st, the 9th annual Southbridge Credit Union Tour Apakum Bike Ride for Land Conservation. And the Project Mayhem races, there are 7 races. We're number 5 on the list this year. So there's going to be 4 races before Mansfield Hollow. Mansfield Hollow will actually be on the 11th of October. I'll start putting them in individually into my events list here soon, because it's kind of one of my things. So finishing points. Bicycle infrastructure. How do you feel about it? How do you feel about getting up and talking about it a little bit more? Get comfortable with your story, and make sure your story is solid and filled with facts. Because when you go to talk about it, people will listen. You've just got to get their attention, but they will never get their attention if you don't show up. Sort of like playing the lottery. You can't win if you don't play, right? This is from our friends at the League of American Bicyclists. Bicycling is freedom. Life is better for everyone when more people ride bikes. The League is making biking an easier and safer option for more people, because when more people bike, people are happier, healthier, and our communities are safer and friendlier, and our planet is greener. Together, we can make this happen. I'll say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud. Get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, the lack of places to safely ride, and do your part. Get out and talk about it. And hey, take that pedal and run challenge. I want you to park that car or truck and ride your bike instead. Just one day out of the week. Just one day. Try it out. See how it works for you. I'll bet you surprise yourself. And remember, whether you're riding your bike or you're driving a car, please be safe and kind. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. Hey. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment below. And you can also send me an email. And that's at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. If you'd like to contribute information to the show or be on the show as a guest, please send an email to me. This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you so much for listening. See you next week. Get on your bikes and ride! Great.